produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, March 13th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the talented volunteer activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. While you're at it, stop by our blog at stash.normal.org. You can check the links on all our news stories, download our PodSafe music, read commentary from myself and other marijuana activists, and leave your comments and response. It's the cannabis community's online home at the blog only Normal can deliver. Your daily audio stash at stash.normal.org. Today is Cannabis in the Law Day here at the Stash, and coming up after the news, we speak with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal, about a frightening new drug war tactic being employed in Arizona. Cannabis Carrie brings us some great reggae music from a Stash favorite, Haya Sika, who returns to the show with a reggae joint called Light Dat Ting. And to conclude our show, we replay our interview with John Lucy IV, a criminal defense attorney in Portland, Oregon, who answers your questions about cannabis and the law. We've got a lot to cover, so sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. GoDaddy silences police watchdog site, RateMyCop.com, from Wired.com. A new web service that lets users rate and comment on the uniformed police officers in their community is scrambling to restore services after hosting company GoDaddy unceremoniously pulled the plug on the site in the wake of outrage from criticism-leery cops. Visitors to RateMyCop.com on Tuesday were redirected to a GoDaddy page reading, "Oops," which urged the site owner to contact GoDaddy to find out why the company pulled the plug. RateMyCop founder Gino Sesto says he was given no notice of the suspension. When he called GoDaddy, the company told him that he'd been shut down for, quote, "suspicious activity," end quote. Police departments became uneasy about RateMyCop's plans to watch the watchers in January, when the Culver City, California startup began issuing public information requests for lists of uniformed officers. Quote, "Having a website like that puts a lot of law enforcement, in my eyes, in danger because it exposes us out there," end quote, said Officer Hector Basurto, vice president of the Latino Police Officers Association. All right, hold on just 1 minute, officer. You guys are public servants. Your names should be public. We're not talking about listing the names of undercover officers or giving out any addresses. This is public information, a cop's name and badge number, and the opinions of that officer's interaction with the public. many of us have had interactions with police where, especially as cannabis consumers, we feel we have been treated with less respect and less concern for our rights than other citizens. Any sort of checks and balances on police misconduct are good things, from internal affairs reviews, police ombudsmen, or even a videotape of, say, four white cops beating the hell out of Rodney King. If police are doing their jobs correctly and with respect for the citizens they've sworn to protect and serve, then they have nothing to fear from the public's opinion of them. Meanwhile, it looks like I'll have to go to GoDaddy.com and cancel them as my website host and registrar. Drug Office's Budget Tactics Faulted, from the Washington Post. Despite congressional demands for transparency, the Office of National Drug Control Policy has a murky budget that understates its emphasis on popular law enforcement efforts over treatment and prevention programs, budget and drug policy experts say. In February, the White House requested $14.1 billion for drug control efforts in fiscal 2009, a 3.4% increase. Nearly two-thirds would go to law enforcement interdiction efforts and programs to destroy drug crops abroad. Just over a third, or $4.9 billion, would fund treatment and prevention efforts. In an analysis of past budgets, John Carnevale, a former Clinton administration drug control office budget director, found that since fiscal 2002, federal spending on, quote, supply-side efforts, interdiction, law enforcement, and overseas activities, has grown 57%. Spending on treatment and prevention grew only 2.7%. Yet research has found that prevention and treatment do more to reduce drug consumption and drug-related crime, said economist Rosalie Pecula, director of RAND Corporation's Drug Policy Research Center. Quote, "That doesn't mean you destroy the enforcement budget," said Pecula, who is set to testify today. "It's just saying that for increases in the budget, you'll get the most bang for your buck by putting it into treatment resources," end quote. Well, of course they want to understate how much money they're putting into locking people up for drugs and how much money they're using to eradicate marijuana gardens, coca crops, and meth labs. Because the general public knows that those methods do not work, and the public is also demanding more drug treatment for people with addictions. It's common sense. A stitch in time saves nine. And people don't need a RAND Corporation study to know that curing an addict makes better economic sense than arresting and jailing an addict. Well, better economic sense if your goal is to actually reduce harms from drug use. If instead your goal is to continue a war without end, to fund a prison industrial complex by increasing the population and recidivism of prisoners, then, if I may borrow a phrase from the administration, mission accomplished. South Carolina, drug testing candidates closer to becoming law, from South Carolina Politics Today. Drug testing candidates closer to becoming law. A key South Carolina Senate committee moved Tuesday to make drug testing mandatory for all candidates seeking elective public office. The bill, passed easily by the Senate Judiciary Committee, but only after a considerable debate, requires candidates for elective office to submit to a drug screen within 35 days of their election. Quote, "Why don't we get them to take a lie detector test to say they've never been to a prostitute?" end quote, inquired Senator Brad Hutto, Democrat from Orangeburg, who questioned the bill's effectiveness. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down a Georgia drug test law for elected officials, citing the state's lack of a historical pattern of such abuse. Quote, "I can support the concept because I'm for drug-free America," said Senator Gerald Malloy, Democrat from Darlington, "but this is a bit of a stretch," end quote. Yes, drug testing for people who want to run for elected office in South Carolina. Not for people who have been elected. This is even if you wish to run for office. And since drug screening overwhelmingly targets cannabis consumers, they may as well just call this the South Carolina Marijuana Disenfranchisement Act of 2008. They floated bills like this up here in Oregon as well. Had they all passed, no person legally using medical marijuana could have been an elected official, a policeman, a teacher, or work anywhere in state, county, or municipal government. Luckily, they all failed.
James James Roquefort here from PeopleRadio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh, well, now on with the show.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
Hey, it's just another reminder that we're still playing our contest this month, Pass the Stash, and this month's prize is Parents' Guide to Marijuana, the new book by Dr. Mitch Earlywine. To win a copy, all you have to do is to send an email. If you're a parent with questions about how to talk to your kids about marijuana, or questions about marijuana in general, send that question to 420research@gmail.com. Dr. Earlywine will pick three of the best questions and answer them on the air here on our Wednesday Stash, and those three questioners will win a copy of Dr. Earlywine's book, Parents' Guide to Marijuana. So get involved and pass the stash with stash.normal.org.
Yeah, this 10 individuals.
Yeah.
And we just want y'all to know that weed helps, you know what I'm saying? So I just want y'all to stop messing with the people who need it to live. It's helping people out there with cancer, AIDS, you know what I'm saying? So y'all gotta let it be, man. Legalize this.
Well, we like to turn to our cannabis and the law segment right now, and we're speaking with the executive director of Normal, Alan St. Pierre, who joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Alan, welcome back to the Stash.
Good day, Russ.
Well, good day to you, but not a good day for some of the people in the state of Arizona. Apparently, the drug warriors down there have found a new tactic to try to stop those of us who might be traveling. And why don't you just fill our listeners in on this terrible tactic they've taken up?
Well, there's a Normal blog post on the front page in the last day about a tactic that has been going on for a couple of months and a little history. Clearly, the Border Patrol has the ability to search cars as they come across the border. And for the last 20 years, for the purposes of both immigration control and for agriculture control, and to not create massive backups at our border, the Border Patrol has had about a 20-mile radius around the border that was its jurisdiction, the federal jurisdiction. And post 9/11, in this world of much more greater concerns regarding immigration, illegal immigration, in states, notably Arizona, the federal government and law enforcement now are really creating great jeopardy for motorists in that there are now road checkpoints that are set up supposedly for immigration checkpoints, but they are manned with, or should I say, dogged up. There are drug dogs there. And so what they're doing is sniffing out people's cars and trucks, and they're trying to find both wholesale traffickers, obviously, but they're, because so many Americans use cannabis, are catching people with cannabis. And we've been getting calls from victims, and we've been getting calls from reporters from some of the major papers down there who are starting to do FOIA, Freedom of Information requests, and are really putting together some comprehensive reporting on how, one, the federal government now is doing these all over Arizona, far away from that 20-mile radius near the border, and also that they are having the drug dogs there and people are getting ensnared in drug prohibition laws. But this is important because 5 or 6 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled pretty strongly, this very same conservative court more or less said that a drug checkpoint is unconstitutional, that the police have to do more than just set up these drug checkpoints. And this came out of Indianapolis. And so in some ways we're seeing law enforcement in Arizona getting around that Supreme Court decision by doing this under the guise of immigration. So that's the major concern that we're trying to bring to people's attention as they travel through the greater Southwest. This is absolutely happening in the Great Bend area of the Big Bend area of Texas, in some parts of New Mexico south of La Cruces, but it seems to be quite concentrated in Arizona.
So the Supreme Court said that it was unconstitutional to set up a roadside stop with the express purpose of checking for drugs, so they just call it something different and they get away with it.
That's correct. And in fact, some other normal lawyers in the last couple of years have pointed out that some courts now are even acknowledging that fake drug checkpoints are okay, meaning that if you're driving down the highway and you see a sign flashing saying drug checkpoint ahead, and of course it's conveniently placed right after you come to a exit where when people take the exit, they often then are harassed and searched by police and drug dogs. And those have been ruled as constitutional, even though they claim that they weren't really checking for drugs. This is one of those, you know, terrific Lewis Carroll-inspired moments in crime and justice, and real jeopardy if you're a motorist who has cannabis on them. And so that's one major concern here, is regarding, you know, the law enforcement getting around the Supreme Court decision. The other component here, which is something that Normal is going to try to remind people over this next year, and I'm going to hope that ASA and a whole bunch of other drug policy reform groups do this as well, is help educate the cannabis consuming community, most notably and importantly the medical cannabis patients, that there's only two states that allow you to cross from the state where you got your permission to use cannabis for medical purposes into another state and not be considered a criminal and be arrested in the same violent way that 830,000 other people are a year.
So we were just, we actually spoke with...
Those two states are Rhode Island and Montana. Those are the only two states where there was enough forethought to think to put that into the law so that patients can engage in their use of their medicine in a lawful, sanctioned way. So point being, you're in Oregon, if you cross over into Washington, you are a criminal. If you go down to California, you are a criminal, even though those are states that allow for medical marijuana.
Yeah, it's definitely through the looking glass when you think about, you know, a Washington patient is perfectly legal in Washington. An Oregon patient is perfectly legal in Oregon, but if either one of them cross the Columbia River, they're suddenly criminals.
In fact, this will not surprise you that, I'm not even from that area, but I now am so familiar with Vancouver, Washington, in the sense of people, it seems to be obviously almost a suburb of Portland, and people will go across the river to do business that day or to go to a class or a seminar or a lecture or whatnot, and because of some circumstance totally removed from their own, they're caught up in a strong-arm burglary. Somebody breaks into their car. Somebody breaks into their locker at work. Something happens, like an accident, that isn't their fault, and their medical cannabis is discovered, and all of a sudden they and that cannabis are criminals and treated quite harshly.
Well, that's something we'll be fighting for all year. Reciprocity in the medical marijuana states. Rhode Island's done it. Montana's done it. It seems to be working out well for them.
Absolutely, and we seek to do this. This is really something that activists can achieve, and we're going to be pushing all year for not only changing the laws, but at least in the short run, educating patients that if they're going to cross into these other states, they've got to be knowledgeable of it. As far as they're, and most patients are concerned, if they have medical marijuana permission, say in California, in their mind, they can go to other states outside of Montana and Rhode Island. That's not legally accurate at the moment.
Now, as far as the Arizona and the Southwestern immigration checks, is there any legal battle coming up on this? Any challenge to this practice that's coming on the horizon?
Not yet. So the folks who have contacted us have all basically either paid a fine because they got caught with a small amount, or they're still waiting to go back and have to deal with a trial or something along those lines. So if they get drawn into the criminal justice system, we're going to find that lawyers are going to challenge these things. And I'm very hopeful that these exposés that are coming out in the Arizona papers will shed a lot of antiseptic light, shall we say, on this practice.
Well, we'll keep a focus on it, too, and we'll let everyone here know at the Daily Audio Stash what happens with those Arizona checkpoints. If anyone in the Arizona area is listening to the Stash and would like to testify about what's going on down there, some first-person accounts would also be very helpful. Just get a hold of us here at the Stash at stash@normal.org, and we'll be sure to get your story told. Alan, thanks again for joining us here on the Stash.
It was a real pleasure. Thanks for staying on top of this, Rob.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Time for our musical break here at the Stash, and we're happy to bring back the righteous Rasta man himself, Haya Sika. His grooves never disappoint, and this track, Light Dat Ting, is not only a great reggae hit, but it also speaks to the truth about cannabis, medical marijuana, and the uses of hemp. Haya Sika was born in Jamaica and sang baritone in his high school choir. Now, embracing the Rastafari movement and the way of life, he creates music that sends a strong message and is as healing as the herb it promotes. You can find Light Dat Ting on his album Journalism 101, The Mixtape 2007, an album that showcases his keen writing ability. Thank you, Haya Sika, for sharing your music with us here on The Stash. You can find out more about this artist online at his MySpace page. We've got links to it up at our blog, stash.normal.org. This is Haya Sika with his tune, Light Dat Ting.
This one is about ganja. Oh, nations, it's a natural healer. It's a natural herb, so many uses of good old hemp feature.
Haya Sika.
Oh, it's great, high grade, for meditate. Like that thing, it's great, high grade, use it to meditate, like that thing, so make I tell you about earlier on, I listen cutting it motor earlier on, as they discuss the world where you're gone, and reasoning time, the king of kings, lord of lords, then I roll a stretch and kick for sneakers on, me last play fun. Go outside, give it a spark. Singing and humming meditation took off. Visions of higher seeker voice on record. The scene shift, night sky and stars. Oh, what a beauty, it's so vast. The breeze blow with massage as it pass. It blows slow, it blows fast. Forward, late night voice in a garage. For a call, singing all sorts of calls. For more people, them yard and abroad. Feature, it's great, high grade. Meditate, like that thing, it's great, high grade, meditate, like that thing, marijuana plants however they sent. Behold its beauty and its divine essence. Use properly up with your spiritual presence. Use by the ancestors and the ancients. Ship and trade by governmental agents. Some also for the payments. Medical marijuana doctors use it with the patients. It balance the frequency and the wavelengths. Alleviate the sickness and the ailments. Doctor get the test results in amazement. Where is the tumor, glaucoma, and adjacent? It's an effective treatment, yo. Marijuana causing hemp. Make food, shoes, garments. Hemp island protein and good nutrients. Materials, textiles, and products of assortments. Hemp paper, bill of smith, for food, giant. It's great, high grade. Meditate. Like that thing, always gay. High grade, for meditate. Myself like that thing, like that thing.
So make I tell you about earlier on. I listen cutting edge motor earlier on. As they discuss the world where you're gone, and reasonings on the king of kings, lord of lords. I will a stretch and kick for sneakers on. I mean, let's split and go outside, give it a spark. Singing and humming meditation to call. Visions of my voice one record. Scene shift, night sky and stars. What a building, it's so fast. The breeze blow with my sword as it pass. It blows slow and then it blows fast. Forward, late night voice in a garage. For a car singing all sorts of chords. From a people them yard and abroad. Feature, yo, yo. It's great. I get meditate.
Hey, like that, yo, like that, I like that.
For this week's Ask an Attorney segment, we're very happy to have John Lucy IV, a criminal defense attorney from Portland, Oregon, with a focus on drug law, and you can find more on his practice at www.law420.com. Mr. Lucy was also the director of North Carolina Normal for 3 years. He just moved here from the North Carolina area, and was also named Activist of the Month by High Times Magazine for his work with National Normal in Washington, D.C., In 2007, he also won the Activism Award from Normal in the field of marijuana law reform policy at the University of North Carolina School of Law. So, John Lucy, welcome to the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks, Russ.
Sure did a good job getting that website domain there, Law420. I'm surprised that was still available.
I was, too.
And let's turn to the questions that we have here. For our Ask an Attorney segment, we had done a story on one of the recent daily audio stashes about an appellate court decision in Saskatchewan, and one of our listeners writes in about this. It says, I heard about on the stash about the Saskatchewan court that ruled that the smell of burnt marijuana isn't enough grounds to justify searches and arrests. There must be some other probable cause because the smell of burnt marijuana rather than raw marijuana implies that the contraband no longer exists because it's burnt. How do the U.S. courts treat the smell of burnt marijuana? Does it justify a search?
You're going to hear me say something called, it depends, which pretty much every criminal defense attorney says about 100 times a day. The issue here is that the smell of burnt marijuana alone in certain states is enough to justify a search, but in other states, you have to have other indicia of possession of marijuana in order to effect a search. The difference here comes in part from the fact that some states treat internal possession of drugs as a crime. So the smell of burnt marijuana indicates to a police officer that a crime may in fact still be taking place, namely internal possession, or what most ordinary folks call being high.
I see. So it would just depend on a state-by-state basis, and of course you could always go to normal.org and check out the membership of the legal committee and find an attorney in your area.
The Normal website actually lists internal possession for a variety of states, so if you're worried about internal possession being an issue in your state, you should definitely check out the state-by-state listing for your state.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you for that. Now, we've got another question here, and this one, I thought this was a good one because when we do our Seattle Hemp Fest and we do other events with our chapter of Normal, we like to show the video Busted from the ACLU, which talks about your constitutional rights in a police encounter. And this person asked the question, I've seen one video that says you should never let a cop search your car. I saw another one that said that if your stash was well hidden, you should let them search. I'm not some dealer trucking 40 pounds around in a trunk. I'm just a guitar player who keeps a quarter or an eighth for personal use. I've got long hair and I fit the description, he puts in quotes here. What do I do if I'm pulled over and the cop asks to search?
Never consent to a search. I know that there's a video out there circulating by a former undercover police officer claiming that you should allow a search. But Busted, a video put together by the ACLU with many, many, many lawyers on staff, will tell you that you should not consent to a search. I personally tell all my clients, and it's even on my business cards, I do not consent to any searches, and I wish to speak with my attorney. Your rights are only your rights if you exercise them. Don't give them up. Use them. Just say no to searches. Don't allow a search. If an officer wants to search your car and he's going to search your car, he's going to do it whether you want to or not. So just say no. That way, when it gets to court, you'll have a chance.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I like to tell people, too, is that, there's nothing we can do about police misconduct if they're going to, violate the law or violate our rights, other than to assert our rights and be able to stand up for them later in court. Now, another question here. This is an interesting one, a real short one. Can you be arrested for paraphernalia if you've never used it?
Once again, it depends. It primarily depends on the state. Most states have paraphernalia laws that are based on the intent of the possessor of the item rather than the item itself. States vary widely, and you should always check with a local attorney to be absolutely sure. The most likely result will be confiscation of the paraphernalia, and if it's clean, without some statement from you that you were going to use it to smoke marijuana or you're going to use it for another drug, likely no criminal charge will be pressed. But remember that every year the federal government raids head shops, pipe shops, and other places to clean paraphernalia, and Tommy Chong went to jail for 9 months for selling clean paraphernalia.
Here's a question. Now that we've got so many states here in the United States that have some form of medical marijuana protection, this is becoming more of an issue. The question is, if I'm a medical marijuana patient and I'm caught possessing medicine in another medical marijuana state, will they arrest me? And the follow-up here is, if I'm caught in a non-medical marijuana state, will the medical use help in court?
Generally, you're going to be arrested in another state if you don't have a valid card for that state. The exception to this is when a state has a medical marijuana reciprocity law. The only state that I currently know of that has a reciprocity law is Montana, which recognizes out-of-state cardholders, but only when they comply with Montana state limits. So you need to check with the individual state before traveling. Most other states don't have a reciprocity law, but you may be able to present an affirmative defense to medical use based on your medical card status in another state. For example, that holds true in Nevada and Oregon have that, because if you had a card in Oregon, you would have seen a doctor within the prescribed period for Nevada's affirmative defense. If you're caught in a non-medical state, your card status may sway a prosecutor to exercise a little bit of leniency, for example, but generally your medical status will not be admissible at trial. This has been a big issue, and we've seen it at the federal level, because in federal court, medical marijuana patients and growers are not allowed to discuss the fact that marijuana possessed or grown was for medical use, and that evidence can't be presented at trial. It just isn't allowed in.
They can't even say the words medical and marijuana in the same paragraph.
Medical and marijuana.
Wow, that's always just a stunning travesty of justice every time I have to mention that on the stash. So, well, those are some good questions. We want to remind everyone out there that if you've got a question for an attorney, every week here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're going to try to have one of the attorneys from the Normal Legal Committee to answer your questions here on Ask an Attorney. Just send your questions to stash@normal.org, and we'll get you on the air. John Lucy IV from Portland, Oregon, criminal defense attorney with the Normal Legal Committee. Thank you very much for being on the Stash today.
It was a pleasure, Rob.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from
George W. Bush, President of the United States. Quote, I wouldn't answer the marijuana questions. You know why? Because I don't want some little kid doing what I tried. End quote. That's from a biography that was written by Douglas Weed, believe it or not. Yes, George W. Bush doesn't want some little kid doing what he tried. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in to the Daily Audio Stash. We'll talk to you again tomorrow for our Friday Stash. We'll get you ready for the weekend. Thanks for listening, and take care of each other.